Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, May 23rd. I'm Ray Graff. It's gardening today. We welcome back Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery, Dale Isler Riggs from the Berry Patch, Fred Breglia of the Landis Arboretum, and Bob Graves of Fadigan's Nursery. If you have a gardening question, something that's bugging you out of the lawn or behind the hedges, give us a call. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Always a popular show, so I advise you to call early, 800-348-2551, or email us, voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org. And Fred, Bob, Dale Isler, and Greg, they're doing their show prep right now, and we'll have a show for you right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's gardening today, and we welcome back Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, Fred Breglia from the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York, Bob Graves from Fadigan's Nursery in Latham, and Dale Isler Riggs from the Berry Patch in Steventown, New York. If you have a gardening question, there are a few open lines now. Give us a call, 800-348-2551. By halfway through the show, there will be no open lines, and your odds will be pretty slim. So give us a call, 800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org, and several people have done that already. voxpop@wamc.org is the email address. The number is 800-348-2551. Hello, gardeners. How are we doing?
Hello.
Hey. Great.
Big day today. A little birdie told me it's National Turtle Day today.
That's the word on the street.
So tell me about this, Fred. You brought it up.
Well, you know, every year they do it just to bring, it's sort of like Arbor Day. You know, why do we have Arbor Day? Well, you know, Arbor Day is every day for most of us, but for a lot of people, it just helps to bring awareness of that. Hey, it's need to plant a tree. Mm-hmm. Trees are important. Trees are the answer. Same for the turtles. So, you know, it's just to bring awareness of it. And so they created the day for so many different things. And, you know, well, I don't have enough things to do, so I sort of track all
It's a good time for
these.
It, too, because now is when a lot of the turtles are moving to That's lay right. their eggs.
Exactly.
And I live near the Mohawk, and they climb all the way up over a railroad line into the backyard and dig a hole and lay their eggs. And it's usually around beginning of June, late May, beginning of June.
It is.
They're near the water and in the water, and then they come up to your lawn and dig a hole.
They come all the way, you know, it's maybe 100 yards or more.
Yeah.
And it's not easy crawling.
No, it takes a while for them to do it, but they do it.
That's all they know how to do.
It's all they know how to do. Yep. But then these little ones have got to make it back to the water.
Yeah.
And they get picked off on the way.
And so many of them get hit on the sides of roads or in middle of roads. So that's, you know, it's important to try to, you know, hey, give them a break, slow down where you can do it safely.
And you'll see along.
We help them cross a lot of times.
The railroad line behind us is now in Niskayuna, is now a bike path. And it's a coal cinder material that makes it up. And they dig their hole
right there.
Right.
But then the other animals come along and dig up the hole and eat the eggs. So you'll see these holes with all this white broken shell around.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
All right. Fred, we had quite a long discussion about this while the news was on, probably more than I needed to know. But when you see a turtle crossing the road, there is a standard operating procedure, yeah?
Yeah. First and foremost, safety first, you know. Don't try to stop or pull off in bad areas. You know, make sure your car is off the road. Do it where you can do it safely. Really watch yourself. You're not certainly not worth dying over a turtle. But that being said, when you can, give them a break and try to help them cross. And, you know, the two most common ones that we see are painted turtles. They're real easy. You can pick them up on the sides of the shells. We always say don't pick them up by the tail. It does damage the turtles, can do some permanent damage to them, to their vertebrae and stuff.
Okay.
And, but be cautious with snappers. You know, they're quicker than you think they are. Their necks stretch further than you think they do.
How can you tell a snapper?
Well, it's a bigger turtle. It has different look. It doesn't have the painted colors on the sides of it. And they tend to have a longer, really pronounced tail.
Yeah.
The shell is not smooth. It's raised, especially in the The concentric rings, they kind of come up a little bit. Whereas yeah. the painted turtles, very, very smooth.
They okay. really look prehistoric.
Really?
They're yeah. really the snappers.
You ever see those Gamera movies? The giant Japanese turtle monster?
Oh, yes. That's yeah. a snapping
turtle. Is that a snapper?
I think so.
That was a mutated snapper. Yeah.
That's about my extent of my knowledge of turtles right there. Gamera.
The Asian version of it.
All right. Well, enough about turtles. It was all fun. But let's get back to gardening. And Jenny sent some pictures in. Earlier, much earlier today. In fact, at about 6 o'clock this morning, Jenny and Amherst plant identification app say the attached is a high bush blueberry, but I never had any fruit since I moved in 12 years ago. The best it does is produce flowers. What can I do to get fruit?
Well, it's right that it is a high bush blueberry. This year, I think you've got a better chance of getting fruit based on all the flowers that I'm seeing on this. I suspect that it's not getting quite enough light. Certainly it's in an under canopy of a forest. And the other thing is there's a lot of other critters that mm-hmm. like to eat blueberries before yep. they turn blue.
Yeah.
So I suspect that they're forming. If you go out in another week to 10 days, you'll see the little tiny blueberries starting to form. They'll start off flat yeah. at the end of these blossoms, and then they'll start to size up a little bit. If you really want to get blueberries, I would cover them with some sort of mesh or netting yep. or something like that to protect the other critters.
That floating row cover material, if you just have one plant, you know, is really it's the stuff you can cover your vegetable starts with it. It's very light, and you could actually wrap that plant yep. right up.
Yeah, what we see, and you know this better than I, Greg, is we see a lot of orioles after the you know, they're going to eat them quick. Yeah. And you'll never yes. see them.
And, yeah. and if you're lucky, even some scarlet tanagers will be in there.
Oh, uh-huh. yeah.
Especially with the woods.
Especially with the woodsy.
Yeah.
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 Now, just to follow up, Dale Eiley, you said before they turn blue, animals of various stripes will like them. Once they turn blue, the animals don't want them?
No, then
oh,
they're really.
Then they're very.
Oh, okay.
yeah. Very well, susceptible
if,
to
if you're trying to grow blueberries in your backyard, you wait till they're just ripe and they're gone that day because the birds know.
Yeah, the birds do. Yeah. They even have some varieties where they'll actually ripen and they're not completely blue. And you probably grow some of those possibly at the berry patch, but I know that they have some to trick the birds. And birds are really on it with the when they're blue.
The bird
they
and
get
turtle
it.
Show today.
Yeah,
if you can go out right. to Let's your blueberry. To well, you go out to your blueberry bush. There, you look at it. You go, oh, they're just all right. looking great tomorrow. I'm gonna have blueberries.
Yeah, that's when they get them.
Yeah.
You go out tomorrow and you go, oh, well, I guess it's gonna be the next day. Maybe it's gonna be the next day. And you can do that right until they're gone.
Oh, that's
exactly.
shit.
You can
unless you cover them.
Speaking of berries, Dale Isla from the Berry Patch in Steventown, you brought some red stuff.
Yes, the first strawberries Ooh. Of the season.
Nice. They're early.
Well, yeah. when you grow them in an unheated greenhouse okay. and they're protected, they start a little early. So
well, I already have, awesome. Have a strawberry, yeah?
Yeah. These are a little bit deformed because they're the very first ones. So pollination in a greenhouse that didn't have a lot of wind and didn't have bees, they're not quite perfect shape, but they still...
They're perfect taste.
Taste really
oh, boy.
Great.
Wow. I like good. The looks of these.
So nice and bright. And
what's
rich.
The variety, did you say?
This one is called Seascape.
Seascape. Oh, we yep. had these last year, right?
Yes.
When we did
it's
the
an ever-bearing variety.
Strawberry oh. tasting. That was fun. The number here is 800-348-2551. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. A couple more emails before we take a break. Then we'll hit the phones. And then we'll go back to the emails, et cetera, et cetera. This is from Kathleen. How do I get rid of asparagus beetles and prevent their return next year? Oh, that's from Stanley, not Kathleen, because I can't read. That's all. It's Stanley.
Yeah, if you have a small patch, I just recommend hand picking them.
Yeah.
That's what I've been doing. I've been harvesting asparagus every night for the last 2 weeks, and the beetles are a little early this year. Normally, I don't see them till the end of harvest, and I've picked off 2 beetles so far.
Oh, boy.
But there's no way to make sure that they don't come back again next year. They're going to be there. If you really don't want to have them around, you can spray your asparagus. I think spinosad gets the asparagus beetles pretty well, which is an organically approved material. But we just, for the numbers that we have...
You don't have that many, right?
No, we have about 400 feet a row of asparagus.
400 feet. Nobody has 400 feet.
That's a lot.
For a vegetable grower, that's not very much.
So pick yours. Pick your beetles.
Right. Yeah. And I'm picking them off by hand in 400 feet. So if I can do it, a gardener can do it.
Exactly, especially a home garden.
Why don't you get an intern?
I have an intern.
You have an intern.
He started 2 days ago.
Awesome. All right.
Yes.
Junior, go get the asparagus beetles. Take care of that. This is from Marty in Hadley. I get powdery mildew on my peonies and tall phlox every year. This year, as they were beginning to sprout, I sprayed them with copper fungicide and did so a few more times. My question is this. Do I need to keep spraying them with the copper fungicide, or should I have already done enough?
We don't know.
Yeah, depends on the weather.
I mean, it's very weather related. It's air circulation related, which can be, you know, part of the location of where they are in the yard. I think if they've done it a couple of times, wouldn't hurt, especially on that phlox, to do it a couple of more times.
Yeah, it is a good weather condition for powdery mildew.
We are seeing a lot of disease.
And
a lot of mildew early.
Yeah, I've noticed that too.
Leaf curl.
It was a good fungal spring.
Yeah, and I want to say it was a great spring in general.
It was
very wet. Yes. Everything is doing really well. It's warmer than usual. You know, the beetles are out. Which is actually also a good thing because everyone wants to plant their tomatoes like on Mother's Day. And we always say in Berkshire County, Memorial Day.
Yeah.
And if you're in the hills towns, maybe June 1st. But this year, you could go ahead and plant them today.
Because it was so wet, everything is lush. And I'm also seeing a lot more insect problems early. Because all that new growth, insects like new growth when it's soft, when they're feeding on it, and we're seeing a lot of insect issues.
Yep, and diseases like that really soft succulent.
Because it was so wet.
And actually fertilization, sometimes, you know, people, you know, try to fertilize their way through problems, but when it comes to insects and diseases, it actually makes things worse. The leaves are more fertile, they're more lush, they're more just perfect for
soft,
soft and real easy to attack insects and funguses.
People wonder
what that
means when you say soft. What it means is the cell walls are thin,
very thin.
They haven't hardened off yet.
No, and that makes them super vulnerable. And it
makes things wilt now because it got hot all of a sudden.
Yep,
we were talking about that before the show.
Yeah, it got really hot really quickly.
Dan Lally, you wanted to add something before we take a break.
The powdery mildew. It also depends on what species of powdery mildew it is. Some will overwinter in this area. Others actually get blown up from further south. So it might not be bad to actually try to get that powdery mildew species identified by sending it off to the disease diagnostic clinic. And that can also have an impact on how you treat it. You can also use baking soda is an approved treatment for powdery mildew.
It won't hurt the plants?
Nope.
Right. Chamomile tea and compost tea. Both of those can work if you're willing to make some of those.
Delicious. Oh, by the way, speaking of delicious, the strawberries, Dale Isla.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Awesome.
Those are great.
But Zachy, let's take a break here. 800-348-2551. It's Gardening Today. We've only just begun with Dale Isla Riggs, Greg Ward, Fred Bregley, and Bob Graves. Your call's coming up. James Cotton on the harp there, a song he wrote for John Lee Hooker, Blues for the Hook on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is our number. It's Gardening Today, and we're very excited. We've talked about turtles and mildew, and what next? Well, let's find out. We'll go to Lance in New Paltz. Lance, you're on.
Good afternoon, fellow gardeners. Can you hear me?
Yes.
So here's my question. My wife and I are avid gardeners, although she's more of the gardener and I'm the grunt. So I have a dump truck full of soil, sand, manure, perlite, and peat moss, and a cement mixer. So I'm going to ask, how many shovels of each would you put in the cement mixer? What would the ratio be in order to make soil? Because This year, we're filling those raised corrugated metal garden beds for part of our garden. So I'm making a lot of soil. So I'm going to hang up to listen to the answer. But it's soil, perlite, sand, peat moss, and manure. And what would you recommend as far as me putting into the mixer?
Probably get a different answer from every one of us.
Okay. The show will be over, but what the heck? Yeah. Greg, you go first.
Well, the first thing I'm going to say is make sure there's holes in the bottom of those containers, that you want it to drain well, because those they're built to hold water for I think, cattle or something. So you want to make sure that there's plenty of drainage, several holes. It's also, those things are like 24, 30 inches high, so that's a lot of soil for any raised bed kind of garden. And so I would probably go light on the soil part, because that's going to kind of limit the drainage ability, and go heavy on the peat moss. And since you have the perlite, I would definitely use a fair amount of that. In terms of a ratio, a third, a third, a third, and then the perlite is less than a third.
Yeah, I would say about right. Yeah.
Yeah, and also, so he may be talking about not the cattle troughs deep. They do make these galvanized metal raised beds that are like 2 feet tall. They're not. They don't even have bottoms.
Great.
So it could be that he's talking about that type of raised
bed. As long as he's got drainage.
And in that case, it's better, because you're not going to have so deep of a soil profile. And I would also highly recommend just checking the pH of your mix, because you don't know where the soil itself came from, the mineral parts, the pH is all over the place. And compost, peat moss, they're all over the place too. I've seen compost go from 6.8 to 4.5. And, within miles of each other, different composts, of course. But so check the pH. It's just a cheap way to kind of figure out where you're at. Most plants like it 6.5, 6.8.
I'd mix up a batch, kind of play with it a little bit, feel it, water it, see what it feels like. Because we don't really know what kind of soil, whether it's heavy or light.
Exactly.
You don't want it too heavy. That's one of the main things.
Yeah, and with perlite and peat moss in there, they're pretty light. They're going to drain pretty very well, which is good, except if it's a dry summer, you're going to be watering that constantly. So you want something that will have some water-holding capacity.
Yeah, the peat moss will give you the water-holding, but
The hard part about peat is once it gets dry, it's really hard to
get wet. Exactly.
You know, I watched a show about how they make scotch over the weekend, because that's what I do. And they have these peat bogs, and then they dry it, and they burn it.
That's why I don't like scotch, because I've been around peat moss all my life.
Really?
I just can't.
Well, if you got any leftover bottles, bring them in next
time. That's why you went with vodka.
Ken, right. Listen,
then you got potatoes involved.
Right.
So another crop.
No, it's got to be American bourbon.
Okay. Oh, gotcha.
Right.
All right, buddy. Now we're talking. That's a different
I'm out of my league on this one, I think.
All right, listen.
Go back to the turtles and the birds.
Okay. Speaking of turtles, Ken wrote in, and I hate to burst all your bubbles here, but you're all way off. Subject heading, turtles in WAMC listening area. Ray, I'm sorry to tell you, but there are no turtles climbing hills or crossing yards and roads around here. Turtles have flippers, not feet, and spend their lives in the water, except to lay their eggs on beaches. It's tortoises that crawl and waddle around on land that are native to New York. Just saying. It'd be great if you were to spread the knowledge, if you find a spot on the show to insert it. Ken, I've done that. Now I'll give our panel a chance.
Is a snapping turtle a tortoise?
Well, I think it is a technicality.
Is it?
As they're common names. So, we're all pretty common people.
I stand corrected.
Well, they self-identify as turtles, so that's how it works. All right, let's go to Middlefield, and Chuck, you're on. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm on the line.
Yes.
I've got rhubarb. I don't know what's going on. It's like 5 feet high, and there's like white flowers on the top.
Yep.
Great.
It's happy.
Never saw such a thing.
They're happy. That's the flower spike. Yeah. They flower when they're reasonably mature. They all flower.
Yep. If you want to take those off, if you're going to use the rhubarb, though, generally, right? You want to usually pinch those flowers back out.
Yeah.
So keep pinching the flowers off. It'll it's still usable, but you're going to just be happier. It's going to want to go into vegetative mode if you take the flowers away, and you'll get more rhubarb. that are.
Oh, it came really early, about 3 weeks ago.
It did. The rhubarb has been flowering earlier this year for some. I've noticed that as well.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, good. That's good information. Thank you.
Thanks, Chuck. Appreciate the call. Gardening Today with Dale Isla Riggs, Fred Breglia, Greg Ward, and Bob Graves. The number is 800-348-2551. Andrew writes in, can you train white pine to become hedges? How would one trim them while they're young to maintain an 8-foot to 10-foot hedge? If not, what are some good plants for 8 to 10-foot hedges in upstate New York?
Yeah, my goodness, that's going to be an awful lot of work with a white pine.
It absolutely is.
I've seen some good ones.
It can be done.
But you have to be on them.
Yep.
If it gets away from you, you can't get it back.
So pines, grow, they produce this long bud called a candle, and you have to cut the candle as a way to shear them. It's really not a good idea to be cutting them when the candles are done. Because then what you're doing is you're not allowing that branch to grow again, and now you're hoping there's some buds set nearby and below where you cut for them to grow out again. So you're cutting in, this year probably June 1st, the candles, and then you have a second opportunity probably mid-July, and you're taking that soft growth, as we were talking about before, and you're nipping all of that back either a half or more.
Interesting.
Yep. I will say, though, if you're trying to keep white pine, though, at 8 to 10 feet hedge.
It's such a struggle.
If it's really Pinus strobus, it's not a cultivar, long term, that's not going to be a good strategy.
That's so a tree that gets 80 feet tall.
Right. And because you can keep the height like you had mentioned, but the problem is that the trunk's going to get fat, the branches are going to get fat, and it's going to want to put on so much growth that 8 to 10 feet is just – you could just pick a better plant.
I'd rather see somebody use juniper or arborvitae.
Yep, like a western arborvitae would be easier.
Hemlock.
Even hemlock.
Would be easier.
Yep.
It can be done.
Yep.
Yep.
And then deciduous things.
Lots of deciduous.
Hornbeam, beech is still used somewhat.
Yep.
Even the viburnums.
I was going to say viburnum trilobum. Yeah. I like, the American cranberry bush viburnum. That's eight foot tall. 5 foot wide,
tons of a little more reasonable ultimate size.
You'll never even have to prune it.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
Let's go back to our phones. It's Gardening Today, 800-348-2551. And our buddy Joan in Schenectady. Hello, Joan in Schenectady.
Hello, Ray in Albany, and hello, my favorite garden.
Hello, hello.
Joan, okay, that's better. It sounded like you were on one of those 1969 NASA tapes from the moon, but now it sounds better.
It's my stupid phone.
Ouch. I
still can't use a stupid phone.
That's hurtful.
excuse me. In fact.
Obviously, you can't work one because are you still there, Joan?
I am.
Oh, good.
You can hear me?
Yes, at this time.
Okay. It's the phone.
Houston, we have a problem. All right, go ahead.
Yeah. When I'm done with my question, Ray, don't click me off. Just say, thank you, Joan, and I'll hush up.
Thank you, Joan.
I can't get back to the radio.
Oh, yeah. Okay. No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Thank you, Ray.
All right.
All right, guys, I found a creeping bug on my apothecary rose. I think I'm doing the right thing. I'm trying to kill them as fast as possible. A little half-inch sickly green caterpillar. And it eats only the buds. Other than killing it, maybe some soap, anything else?
Yeah, sure. Insecticidal soap. You can, you could try making your own with some dish detergent if you want.
BT would work on that,
BT.
Too. BT. Yep. Bacillus thuringiensis.
I keep thinking it's a rose slug, which is not in that moth butterfly family. I think it's a true bug, I think. And so they also eat the leaves, and they eat the underside of the leaf, making the leaf look a little lacy. So do you have any leaves that look like that?
No, they curl up almost like in a caterpillar netting kind of thing.
Oh, well, then BT might be the thing then. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So any general purpose insecticide, any organic insecticide will work.
All right, Joan, I'm considering saying goodbye. I want to thank you. Is there anything else that you should add before we end this one?
We're so good. Thank you, Ray.
Thank you very much. Enjoy the new phone. The number is 800-348-2551. It's gardening today with Fred Breglia, Greg Ward, Dale Isla Riggs, Bob Graves. Fred, how was the sale? You had the sale last week.
Yeah, it was really good. Thanks for asking. Thanks for all the people that came out to support us. And, you know, we gave a lot of new homes to a lot of great plants. And yeah. it was I think the first year that we actually ran out of parking places on Saturdays.
At the Landis Arboretum. How many parking spots are there?
It's a big field, plus we have a smaller lot, plus we have additional parking here or there as well. So, I mean, it's the parking, people were able to get them in, but they were literally having to work to this time. It was not self-parking. They were looking for the holes, plugging them in.
Yeah.
We had an incredible amount of plants, tons of Landis-grown stuff, and we did remarkable. There are some plants left over, though, and they're at the Landis Arboretum's headquarters right outside of the farmhouse on a table, and they're all priced, and it's sort of honor system. There's a donation box nearby. Money or cash or checks can go in the donation box. So if you did miss out, come on out and check it out. And we still, like I said, have quite a bit left.
Anything going on at the nurseries?
Watering
all the time.
It's been so hot the last few days. It's hard to keep stuff wet.
I mean, it's been, as we were saying, it's been a really great spring for planting. The soils are pretty moist, and so getting things in the ground this spring has been great. It got a little hot there for a couple of days. It's going to cool off.
Now. Yeah, it's not lasting long.
Actually, next week looks really nice.
I think we're going to continue to have really great planting weather where it's, other than these little heat spells, very easy to maintain whatever you're
doing. You know, a lot of people wait till now to do their vegetables, and next week's going to be a really good week.
Perfect.
Yeah, we always waited till Memorial Day. Traditionally, we've never had a problem, and you know, sometimes people jump it; they want to get it in there earlier. But you don't gain that. You could this year, for sure.
You could have gotten, but you never know.
You don't know, and you know how much do you really gain by getting in a week earlier? You know, I've always found that you don't. You know, it ends up catching up, and you know.
Dale Isla knows it isn't worth the risk if you're really making a living in farming.
That's it.
If you want to take a risk, you make structures so that you're not taking the risk.
Yeah. Right.
Speaking of Dale Isla, how are things at the Berry Patch? Are you open for business at this point?
The Berry Patch, we still have the honor system set up. We're actually ripping through tomato transplants. We don't have a whole lot left. We started with 28 varieties, and I think we're down to 16 varieties left. We're on our second seeding of transplants, and we'll have some perennials coming along in a couple weeks. We have some cute color spots here and there, and a lot of potted herbs as well, but it's still the honor system.
Okay, fair enough. And that's working out okay for you?
Most of the time. Last Sunday we had a little bit of an issue, but most of the time it works.
Bob Graves, have you ever considered going to the honor system over at Fatigan's?
No.
You, Greg?
I don't think so. No.
Not much honor over there in Latham. All right. Nehemiah writes, and every year my flocks get covered in a white powdery substance. What is it? Can I do anything now before it happens again?
So powdery mildew, we've talked about that briefly at the start of the show. And there are some home remedies. Baking soda we talked about. That works.
It's really important to do it now before you see it. That is what you should be doing.
Fungicides are preventatives. They are not eradicants.
Right.
It doesn't get rid of it once you've got it. You've got to prevent it before you get it.
Yeah, and it does seem to be, like we talked about, a good fungal year in general, and I've seen a lot of powdery mildew already.
And you don't know what the weather's going to do. Maybe it's not so bad from here on in. Maybe it is.
John in Stockbridge says, he's been using an organic homemade solution from horsetail for a preventative for powdery mildew. It adds silicone to the plants. It works great and uses up the horsetail. Anybody heard of that one?
Wow. I haven't heard of
horsetail. I mean, we mentioned baking soda. Dale mentioned baking soda. And I have, as I before, we actually have used chamomile tea on rosemary plants during the winter. That works really well. We do it daily in this case.
And you can make tea out of horsetail. So maybe there's some correlation there.
The most common ones are copper and sulfur in terms of organic fungicides. Yes. Those are the ones most people would be using.
All right, let's grab one more call here before the next break. And William's in Spencertown. William, you're on.
Oh, greetings. Thanks for the show. I just have two questions. A while ago on a show, someone was talking about a potential problem of putting ashes in compost because it creates too much acidity. And then I recently planted a cherry tree with some of the compost. I mean, I planted a lot of things with it, but the bottom petals or leaves are sort of turning yellow, and I'm wondering, could that be a sign that it's too acidic?
Yeah, well, the wood ash actually makes it more alkaline, so yeah, so not acidic. It would actually, but it does have a strong buffering capacity. So we always say a little wood ash is okay, but a lot of wood ash can do a lot of damage, and so it actually raises that pH up.
And if your upper leaf, if your newer leaves are not yellow, they're green and turgid and looking good, then it's probably not a pH issue. If this is a new tree, I think you mentioned, it's pretty common.
Yes.
It's pretty common for something that's been in a container, moved around a few times, you know, then to your house and then planted, to already have a few yellow leaves. Usually the inner lower leaves, as you mentioned, turn very nice, a nice bright yellow right now when it drop off. But, you know, a few of them is fine. You're going to have more coming this month. We talked about how it's been a moist spring. Of course, this is a new plant, so you'll want to water it well once a week. Regardless of the weather.
It is drying out really quick with these last few days. It doesn't take long for the soil to dry out.
I mean, I have actually quite a bit of clay, so I'm in a place where, like, if you dig a hole, often water will stay in it for a while.
Yeah, which is not good either.
But, I can't. I know it's not good. I mean, but even around here, it's amazing how it can dry out.
It can dry out.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. Yeah.
I would just say it's transitional.
All right, so that answers that. Yep. Thank you much for that. And then the other question is, I want to get some chestnut trees, and I wondered if you have them. And I know you need to get either a hybrid or a Chinese one, because American ones, I guess, are kaput. And then I wondered I wondered if you sold them, and I wondered if you need to plant two.
All right, we want to be very general here. We're not advertising, so you got to be careful.
Well,
here.
I mean, for whoever sells them,
okay.
Right?
Okay. Oh, does anybody sell them?
Garden centers do carry them.
Yeah, they are available. I mean, I know in the past we've had
them. They're hybrids. You know, they're crosses. Some of the newer hybrids, and they're usually available. So check your local garden centers.
All right, listen, we have to take a break. William, thanks so much for the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. VoxPop@WAMC.org is the email. Hit it. Nelson Riddle and the Orchestra, a theme from Route 66 here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551. What are you laughing
about? I remember that show.
Kind of a middling show, but a heck of a theme, you know?
Yes, it was.
Not bad at all. It's a Vox Pop on WAMC. 800-348-2551 is the number. And let's grab a few of the emails that have come in before we get back to the phones. This one came in before the show from Barbara. We had contracted with a landscaper to have two maples and a redbud planted in September. Because of scheduling issues, they didn't go in until early November. As you can see from the attached photos, which I forgot to print, the maples are tall but not spreading. The redbud has very few flowers. The leaves that have come in are very sparse. Is there anything we can do to encourage more robust results down the road, or was November just too late to plant? We had a pretty mild winter. Landscaper guarantees his plantings for a year. Should we try again this September?
It's not November's not too late to plant. It just means it's going to take it another year to get a grip and get going. It's behind.
And if the leaves are, you know, they can be small still and a little slow, but if they're evenly dispersed from the top of the leader all the way on the ends of all of the lateral branching, then those trees are looking good.
A redbud's going to have small leaves the first year.
And that's always going to be a little slow to start, first year especially.
And fertilize them. I mean, that's the thing to do now, fertilize them.
Yep, fertilize them. Make sure they're watered, you know, to break up drought periods, you know, once a week or so throughout the season, because they are newly planted trees, and we want to help them establish. So,
here's one from Ellen. Fred, I know you were going to be all over this one. Ellen writes, when you say to prune a large shrub 30% at a time, are you talking about by height or cutting back 30% of the stems and branches?
30% of the total volume of I guess you would say, leaves, branches, twigs, the whole total volume. So 30%.
It depends a little bit on what it is, too.
And it's up to 30%.
And it's up to 30%. You could do less. Yeah, but with something like a lilac, for example, 30%, if you're doing it at the right time and the plant's not overgrown and got really old, and it's so you're coming in and you're taking maybe, you got maybe 9-10 canes, 10 large stems. You're taking 3 of those stems out. So it's mostly all just stem wood with some leaves attached in that case. But if it was, an evergreen that we wanted to cut back or reduce, then we would, be looking at more total volume of foliage. But again, 30%.
Right. So Anthony says, and we've talked about horsetail today, is there any easy way to get rid of this stuff?
Keep cutting it.
Yeah, we were talking about that even in the break room prior to the show. Horsetail is resistant to a lot of different types of organic and non-organic herbicides. It's easy to pull, but hard to get the root. When we have gravel or stone areas, we use something called the Weed Dragon. It's a weed torch.
It's a propane torch.
It blows, kind of fire, and you don't want to use that around a lot of things, including, mulch or planting beds, but in stones like creek wash or around.
The thing to recognize is if it doesn't get in your lawn because you're mowing it every week.
Right.
It gets in areas that you're not mowing. Right. So if you can go in and cut those every week, weed whack them, hedge trim them or something. Just
That's
keep
right.
cutting and cutting and cutting.
Right. But if you did no mow May, you're not in good shape. Right?
Exactly.
Is that it?
Horsetail can be a real pain in the grass.
Yes, it can.
All right. One more email. Thank you for that hilarity. One more email and then we'll go back to the phones. It's The Gardening Show. Greg Ward, Dale Isla Riggs, Fred Breglia, and Bob Graves. Chris writes in, hello all from Medusa, New York. Hello, Chris. Chris says, moved here nearly 4 years ago, had 2 perfectly healthy fir trees near the house, unsure of what kind, yet very quickly they perished over the last year. Maybe it's my personality, says Chris, and they had to be cut down. But I do wonder why or what caused them to wither and die so quickly.
It might be needle cast.
I'm saying needle cast.
That's what I'm saying, too.
If it's a fir, like a Doug fir or a white fir in particular.
Yep. I'm thinking it's probably Douglas fir.
And they go quick.
Yeah, and they can once you get needle cast on them, it doesn't last long.
Nothing that he did.
No, nothing that you did. It's the same kind of disease, but a different pathogen that causes all of these Colorado blue spruce and Colorado green spruce to have
15 years
die
ago,
back.
15 years ago, it wasn't an issue.
No, we recommended planting them. They were a great tree. Nowadays, we don't recommend planting, especially Colorado spruce.
And some varieties are resistant, some aren't. Yeah. But, you drive around, you're going to see dead Colorados all
over the place. Yeah.
That's a shame. Yeah. All right, let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551 to Delmar. Donna, you're on.
Hi, thanks. Garden types. I have a question about cannabis seeds. I am germinating them right now, and I don't want to, go through the whole in the house thing in the basement. I want to know if you have any techniques for where to put it in my yard and how I can, nurture it so that it grows the way I want it to grow. And then the last question about that is, how do I know that the seeds are feminized or whatever that word is?
Yep. So, full sun, full sun for sure. And, fertilized. In terms of whether or not they're feminized seeds or not, you'd have to figure that out from the person that you bought it from, the seed source. They're generally advertised that way. Mm-hmm. If they're on an online thing, if it's from somebody else, then you're not sure. You're not going to know until they start to flower. They are separate male and female flowers. So the males will produce a pollen and the females will produce a flower.
There's a tremendous amount of information online and in magazines about soil mixes and fertilizers and specialty things to put in the soil. There's so much information.
But a nice, open, sunny location.
Yep.
Scarifying?
Mm-hmm.
We don't need to scarify it.
Okay.
Well, are there any critters?
I didn't want to scarify it. They're so small.
What's scarifying?
Scarifying is how do we break the seed dormancy? How do we get it to pop? But with those, you don't have to do anything.
It just occurred to me. Are there any critters that eat those things?
They sure are.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah. They'll eat them up. Yep. Deer will eat them. All kinds of critters will eat them.
Will the deers get, a little inebriated from it?
They might.
Really?
Might.
deer staggering around eating Cheetos. Hey, Donna, thanks a lot for that. 800-348-2551 is the number. Let's go to Shelburne, Massachusetts. Lynn, you're on.
Hey there. Thank you for taking my call. You guys are great. Last year I bought a little azalea called a Clear Creek Yellow Aromi Hybrid. I put it in and it looked okay, except the leaves are a little funny. They're kind of puckered up a little. The new leaves are puckering. They're coming out thin and odd looking. Any ideas?
It's an azalea, you said? Azalea?
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of azaleas flower heavily before they put out much leaves, and deciduous azaleas drop the leaves, and they sometimes do come out kind of small. It might be normal.
I'd be checking pH for sure, because azaleas like it quite acidic.
They do.
The color of the leaf is good, a nice even green. Some are darker than others, but a nice even green. Then the puckering could also just be weather related, that they came out either while it was a little chilly a couple weeks ago,
They were doing this a little bit last year, too.
Flip over the leaves and just see if there's any kind of detritus under there, some kind of
varnishy-looking
insect. There's a possibility.
There's a lace bug that gets on those, and it deposits a varnish, like, on the underside of the leaf.
If the pH is off, if it is off, it could tie up nutrients, and a cupping type leaf is could be a deficiency symptom.
Yeah.
So pH would be a good place to just start.
Yeah. All right, Lynn, thanks a lot. By the way, Mary writes in, what are the best blueberries to grow in the Albany area?
Hmm. Oh, there are so many great ones. We grow 19 different varieties to go from early season to late season. But among my favorites that are really reliable and don't tend to get too much disease issues are Duke, Blue Ray, Blue Crop, and Blue Gold.
Mm. And we've carried most of those for years and done well with them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Mary goes on, why is it best to plant a few different types?
It helps extend the season, so they have different maturity levels. So like our Dukes will start in early June, whereas our latest varieties we're picking into September, but we're not picking Dukes in September.
Does it improve pollination with different varieties?
And it can certainly improve fruit size.
Fruit size.
Yes. So as long as they are pollinated between different cultivars, you'll get bigger berries.
Interesting.
Dave and Olive wrote in, did you say deers? Did I say deers?
Deers.
You might have.
Oh, I'm losing it. Okay, it's time to go, people. This career's almost done.
Let's go back to turtles. Huh?
Deers, turtles, whatever. Hey, let's go back to our phones now. And Pittsfield, yes, John, you're on.
Hello, Ray, I love all your programs.
Well, thank you.
I have a particular problem. I planted about 3 years ago some day lilies, or they're called tiger lilies. And then a year later, my neighbor planted some morning glories. And the morning glories are choking out the tiger lilies. I want to keep peace in the neighborhood. And also, I noticed that with the morning glories, a lot of bees come, and I care about my environment, and I know bees need the food and stuff, so I'm just looking for the best answer that I can solve this with.
I would say that gardening is an art form, and you have these daylilies that you want to, give you a show, and to have morning glory or any vine sort of competing with them is not really a good idea. Most gardeners would go out and separate them, break up the fight a little bit and have the morning glories have their own location.
Put them somewhere else.
Yep, that's kind of what I would say. Generally you want to kind of...
They can be invasive.
They can be, and some of those morning glories are like vine weeds.
They're very invasive.
I would ask your neighbor if they actually planted them, because morning glories are usually an annual, the ones that are showing.
Correct.
Usually an annual that has to be replanted every year.
Yep.
And if they're morning glories that keep returning, those are usually something that people don't plant because they're a little
Telling you, these morning glories, no matter what I do, come back every year.
So it sounds like It sounds like it's a bindweed, which is a field bindweed or a hedge bindweed, and they have the, they're in the Morning Glory group, and they have the same kind of flower, mm-hmm. but they're much more aggressive. And you know, those, we've had them in the gardens for years. We generally weed those
out
because they are going to take over.
Thank you for that. Thank you for that. Yeah. That answers a big question.
Yep. John, so that's definitely what's going on. It sounds like.
Appreciate the call very much. Now let's go to Elizabeth Keelan. Are you in Elizabeth, New Jersey?
No, Elizabeth, Upper State, New York.
Ah, there you
Elizabeth
are.
Elizabethtown. It's Elizabethtown.
Oh, Elizabethtown doesn't say that here. Okay, go ahead.
So it's the county seat of Essex County, up here. And my question is, my husband, for a present, gave me a load of he bought from a contractor topsoil last fall, wintered over, and this spring I've been spreading it on around on places that I wanted to nutrify the soil. For flower garden, mostly annuals. Guess what came up? Garlic mustard, like an army.
Wow.
So how do I get rid of it?
Yep. So, you know, cutting it, pulling it, it pulls out easy. So, you know, it's a lot of work, especially if you have a lot of it. It doesn't like to be mowed. You want to stop it from going to seed.
Okay. That's right.
Smothering it if you have areas where you can put a piece of black plastic down and kind of just cover it, or a piece of weed fabric, something like that would also.
Good idea.
All of the above.
Yep.
Whenever you bring topsoil in, you get all kinds of junk. You just do. There's all kinds of seeds in that.
And so cultivate. You know,
I thought I would smother.
The
problem is that 3/4 of the pile has been distributed onto the garden that I wanted to start. And then later, like only by a few rainfalls, the garlic mustard made itself known. Still on the wintered over pile mountain of it. So what I've done is to plant this flattened area with this topsoil where it was so disturbed by me, wheelbarrow full by wheelbarrow. The mustard seed hasn't sprouted up, but I've put over it red or crimson clover. Dispersed, watered, and hoping.
Yeah, so maybe it'll
out-compete
that's
a good idea.
Yeah,
that...
So if you want to create a flower garden in this spot and you want to do it this year, then I think simply weeding it out as it germinates and comes up in that area, then maybe once or twice, maybe wait another 10 days and do it again. Then go ahead and plant what you want to plant, especially annuals. And then mulch those annuals. That will inhibit any new seed from germinating. I'm not saying you won't see some again, but now your annuals will dominate. And then as you get back out in the garden every week or so and you see a few odds and ends, you pull those up.
Yeah, and I would urge you to be pretty diligent this year. If you've never had garlic mustard on your site before, then this first year would be a good year to try to really get it out. Because if you leave it and it grows, into next year, you'll probably always have it to some degree.
Covering that extra the pile that you haven't disturbed yet, covering that with a tarp of some kind to inhibit any new growth.
Go ahead.
Because of your suggestion of smothering it, I thought with the remaining pile, I would tip it. I would, smother it with its own underpinnings. So that I got sort of using the garlic mustard as a green manure, and then it was at the bottom of this little smaller pile, and then I'll tarp that.
Yeah.
But the annuals are already planted out into this probable 50 feet by 10 feet patch of.
So that's only 10 seconds here.
So you're going to weed that out of non-annuals, weed them all out, and then mulch.
Got it.
Well, thank you so much for that call. Very quickly, before the theme hits, Dale Isler, question for you from Jody. I'm trying to grow cherry tomatoes in pots. They're the tiny grape-like ones. Can I plant two plants in a 5-gallon pot?
I would stick to one.
Okay. All right, well, we're done here. How do people find Fadigan's, Bob Graves?
Fadigan's.com. We're on Troy Schenectady Road near the Albany Airport Road, 2.5 miles west of the Northway.
You sound like a radio guy in this version. Making me feel inadequate. Greg!
We are at 600 South Main Street in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, or wardsnursery.com on the web.
And Dale Isla Riggs, The Berry Patch.
TheBerryPatch.net and on Route 22 in Steventown, New York.
Fred Breglia, The Landis Arboretum.
Yeah, we're at 174 Lape Road, Esperance, New York. And info, or I should say, landisarboretum.org.
Well, thank you all for coming. A lot of fun today. We'll see you all in 2 weeks. Support comes from Bennington Museum, home of Grandma Moses, the Jane Stickle Quilt Revolutionary War artifacts, and Bennington Stoneware. BenningtonMuseum.com. You know, maybe Bob Graves should do all this. Amtrak with New York summer getaways from downtown to downtown with Wi-Fi, leg room, no driving, no middle seats, environmentally conscious travel, Amtrak.com. And the State University of New York working to drive research, a scholarship, and innovation to help promote healthier lives, a cleaner planet, and a more just world at 64 colleges and universities across New York State, suny.edu/research. Well, thank you all for being with us today. Thanks for the call. Sorry if we didn't get to yours. We'll do it again in 2 weeks. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Peter Hughes screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, Bob Graves' guest will be Chef Rick Orlando, and we'll talk about Italian cooking and things like that. Join Bob tomorrow, won't you?